Maybe you were the kind of kid who liked taking tools to some of the household appliances. It was usually a good idea only if they were already broken and unplugged as well. Within that safety zone, it's fun to let the mad scientist in us loose for a while. Today's guest encourages that mad scientist in the book The Art of Tinkering. This is a book packed with ideas and pictures and demonstrations of projects at the meeting point of art, science, and technology for kids and kids at heart. Karen Wilkinson is the co-author. She and Mike Petrich are the co-directors of the Tinkering Studio at the Exploratorium in San Francisco. They've been working together as a team for more than two decades to integrate science, art, and technology for learning environments, both in and out of school. Karen Wilkinson, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks, Jeffrey. I'm happy to be here with you.
Let's get some basics out of the way. For the people who don't know it, what is the Exploratorium?
Well, the Exploratorium, to me, is a magical place. It's a museum in San Francisco that's along the Embarcadero now. We recently moved, but it's a space where you come in and you interact with exhibits, try things out. It's a learning laboratory of sorts, really.
And this sounds like a match made in heaven, though, you and Mike and the Exploratorium.
Absolutely. We actually came to teach a two-week workshop back in 1999 and
really?
Never went home.
That 2 weeks just kept growing and growing and growing.
Yep.
So what is the Tinkering Studio? Let's back up a step, actually. I want to go to what is tinkering, first of all. Interesting, if you look at some of the dictionary definitions available online, one of them, and I'm paraphrasing just a little bit here, an attempt to repair or improve something, often to no useful effect.
Yeah, it's that often to no useful effect that's particularly great, isn't it?
It is. But what is tinkering, obviously, is to a greater effect, I think, in your mind.
Yeah, to us, we talk about it as thinking with your hands, but it's kind of working on a problem that you might not know how to solve at the very beginning, but you're going to try things out, get feedback from things that don't work, maybe take a new path, but it's a way of interacting, you know, for us, science, art, and technology, but it's a way for interacting kind of with the world around you that's playful and investigative and just kind of, well, we call it a tinkerer's disposition. We feel like it's something we should all be cultivating, kids and adults, within ourselves.
So not just the lone kid with the pair of pliers on the toaster, but all of us, really.
Yeah, exactly.
And so what is the Tinkering Studio? What goes on there?
Well, so the Tinkering Studio was a bit of an experiment. Now that we moved to the new location, it's taken on a much more prominent space. But it's a place within the Exploratorium where we encourage museum visitors to slow down and use some tools. There's lots of loose parts. It's chaotic sometimes. But our main goal is to have people come in and have an idea of their own, to author this idea and bring something into physical reality. That sounds kind of out there, but really it's about thinking creatively about kind of all of the science and art stuff we have to offer.
Is that a hard hurdle for people to get over, particularly as they get older, the ability to not only come up with an idea, but then approach a table full of tools and materials and begin to turn that idea into something tangible?
I think it can be. I think it can be really intimidating. And I feel like as adults, we need to give ourselves a break a bit and give ourselves permission to really play. That seems like, you know, an acceptable word for kids, but less acceptable in terms of adult behavior. And we don't believe that at all.
All right. So when we think about adults and some of the things they might do, I mean, a lot of adults have craft workshops and things like that, but we're not talking about a hobby here. We're not, because it sounds like in that circumstance, you know what the end result is going to be.
Yeah, sometimes. But I think the book is filled with people who are hobbyists or enthusiasts, and some actually make their living at this work, too. But interestingly, I think crafters can even go there when they sort of leave a knitting project behind and it morphs into something like Emily Stone King. She's one of the artists in the book that we feature. She knits anatomically correct dissected animals. So it's knitting. It's a craft that, you know, knitters around the world would recognize, but just done in a slightly subversive and humorous way.
I'm trying to wrap my mind around that. She knits anatomically correct dissected animals.
Yes. And it's a technique, interestingly enough, it's a technique that was developed for making toes and heels for socks. And she thought, oh, this is kind of like I'm able to make three-dimensional things, and kept going with that. And now she has a store on Etsy that she calls Anitomy, like anatomy, but Knitomy.
What age range is the book The Art of Tinkering aimed at?
Well, you know, it's funny. I feel like it's aimed at everyone, you know, but people with kids say, oh, this is great for my kids, and adults say, oh, this is great for me. We try to make it kind of part coffee table book, so it's got a lot of illustrations, you know, and we want it to be really beautiful and vivid with photographs. And we didn't want it to be a step-by-step kind of how-to book. So we call it, we laughingly call it the non-how-to book. But we give you ways of getting started in a wide variety of kind of genres based on the artists that we feature in the book.
And you go into some depth on each of these. The first section on photography in particular goes through a bunch of different techniques and results. And so it's not like you just get a little skimming here. I mean, you really do take them into a bit of depth.
Yeah, I am continually just absolutely inspired by the makers and tinkerers that are out there. We used to have to go and seek them out, but now they come and find us. And, you know, just the simple idea of photography taken in so many directions, I think it can be inspiring and kind of get you going with something you might try.
Much more to talk about the kinds of tinkering that are included in the book, The Art of Tinkering. Karen Wilkinson is the co-author with Mike Petrich of this book. We'll come back and talk more with her and take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join us back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 30. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Karen Wilkinson. She's the co-author with Mike Petrich of the book The Art of Tinkering, out of the Exploratorium in San Francisco, where Karen and Mike are the co-directors of the Tinkering Studio. This is tinkering on a new level. You may be amazed by the kinds of materials that are out there in the world today, things that kids and adults alike can work with, and you can join our discussion about tinkering and the kinds of products that come out of that, even if it's just a satisfaction of having done something. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, if you'd like to talk about this with us. Our local number for the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Was there any trepidation about trying to turn the Tinkering Studio into a book, Karen?
Well, having not authored a book before, yes, absolutely. We wanted to somehow capture the kind of playfulness and the whimsy that we see happening in the Tinkering Studio and really kind of honor the work of the people we've had in residence with us. So, you know, I still remember at the very first meeting, one with our publisher, one of the things that the design team and I were saying that was, we wanted you to be able to tinker with this book. And we had a couple of ways that we thought you could do that, but my favorite was to try to get a printer who would print conductive ink on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually got one, and it works. So you can literally take a 9-volt battery, stick it down on the ink on the cover, and put an LED in line with it, and it lights up.
I'm dying to try this. I just have to find an LED nearby. Where can you find those?
Well, Radio Shack will have them, or electronic stores.
Okay. Well, yeah, it is kind of interesting. There are circuits right on the front of the book printed with electrically conducting ink right there on the cover of it, which is a great sort of thing. In larger terms, though, is it a tricky step to consider turning something like the Tinkering Studio into a book because of the fact that you know, kids tend to get a lot of their stuff from screens these days?
Yeah, that's really true. And, you know, so much of what we do in the Tinkering Studio moves. We have, like, kinetic things and things like that. So we puzzled over this for a while, but we felt like just giving enough information so people could then go and Google these folks and find out more and get involved in hacker spaces or maker places near them was really our goal.
Maker places and the maker movement, this comes up in your book, and it reminds me, it was just last week we had the author of Why We Make Things and Why It Matters, Peter Korn, on with us. He was talking about making wood furniture, but it seems like it's a similar sort of vein of thought.
Yeah, I think it's a real deeply human desire, really. And actually, your neck of the woods is an active space. We were brought up to Science Works in Ashland, to give a talk about tinkering, and lots of folks are doing really active things up in that whole area.
Well, as a matter of fact, we have a call here from Roger in Ashland, who I think wants to talk about that very thing. Roger, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Karen Wilkinson.
Well, thank you. Don't you love the word tinker? I just think it's a great word. It just opens up the mind and to all sorts of opportunities and fun things to think about. But the reason that I was calling is we're all familiar with ScienceWorks, and thank you for mentioning that. And this coming Memorial Day weekend, in five short weeks, there will be the second annual Tinker Fest at ScienceWorks Children's Museum.
Yes.
And, yeah, I just wanted to mention it. I was, you know, if you're talking about tinkering, well, ScienceWorks, Memorial Day weekend, Saturday, Sunday, that's what it's all about.
All right. Thanks for the information about that, Roger. Appreciate that. And Karen, are you coming back to ScienceWorks Hands-On Museum for that Tinkerfest?
Well, it is killing me that I'm not. We were invited, and yes, I wanted to go. I've seen great videos from what happened last year, but Mike and I are actually on our way to Russia that very day to go do tinkering over there.
Really? Where in Russia?
In Moscow. There's a technological museum that's bringing us over for a festival, and then we make our way to Israel next. To the Bloomfield Science Museum there.
All right, I guess I can understand skipping Ashland for Moscow and Israel. Just a little. One of the prefaces in the book refers to tinkering as directionless activity. Does it always start that way? Or can you have a stronger idea than just like, I'm going to tinker for a while?
Well, I think you can have an idea, but it's really about being open to changing your directions based on the things that you do. Not necessarily, you know, learning isn't linear. And I think that's something that we can, as science museums at least, and even educators in general, can do to really, to let people know, you know, you're going to make mistakes, there are going to be things that don't work, but don't let that stop you. Turn that failure into feedback and keep going. You often don't end up where you thought you were headed. That to me, that's tinkering.
Are there some disclaimers here, like don't take apart mom's iPhone, things like that?
Well, actually, I would love to tell you where to get the perfect tool to take apart an iPhone.
Feel free.
But mom probably wouldn't appreciate that.
All right. Don't think that many. Well, okay. Well, just in case the kids are listening, we'll skip that one for now. Maybe we'll come back to it. Is this a process that is a lot easier for kids than adults? I mean, do adults tend to get a little stuck in their patterns of thinking and not just let themselves do or be?
Well, we see adults kind of jump in pretty fully. I mean, they're very polite in the beginning, and they kind of push their children forward if they have them. But the things that we offer to tinker with are kind of compelling to all ages. So given the chance and the encouragement, no, adults just jump right in.
All right, a few people might hit you upside the head for using prototype as a verb, but what do you mean when you write prototype rapidly?
Yeah, for us, prototyping is really about iterating, trying out an idea. You know, if you have an idea, get it down at least on paper, but even better, into kind of a physical mock-up, cardboard, whatever, what have you. Get it out, try it out, and then kind of iterate and make changes based on that. Don't get super attached to something. You know, a lot of times people get really invested in one idea, and they don't let the idea evolve.
I know you've been at this for a while, but does it still surprise you sometimes the different ways in which people can bring thoughts to reality? I mean, some have to do it on paper, some have to do it in a more physical sense.
Oh, man, yes. I feel like, to me, more than anything, the experience both at the museum and in this book is just a humbling experience, but also just a celebration of human ingenuity. People come up with amazing things.
And there are lots of exhortations at the beginning of the book. Be comfortable not knowing. Go ahead, get stuck. This is one that's really going to perk up the attention of some parents, I think. Put yourself in messy, noisy, and sometimes dangerous situations. Please elaborate.
Yeah, that's the one we do get asked about often. We do risky things, and we encourage people to take risks. But, you know, we temper that with, if you go about using things like soldering irons or spot welders or things like that with kids, And adults, there's a real attention that's given to, whoa, they're going to trust me to use this. We do talk about safety, but the thing that's driving it is not necessarily the safety. It's how compelling this project is that you're working on. So in order to do that, we're going to work with some potentially dangerous things.
All right, so I think that one of the things you want to have is a first aid kit nearby.
Yeah, Band-Aid. You know, we jokingly said Johnson & Johnson should sponsor our work because we like Band-Aids.
Especially if the X-Acto knife is given such a prominent place in the book.
Yeah.
There is quite a spread of tools and gadgets. Can you walk us through some of the things that you require for just sort of basic tinkering?
Well, you know, ask any one of us on the tinkering team, and we're going to tell you a different favorite tool. But, you know, some of my go-to things, a good thick and thin Sharpie, that's going to be a surprising tool. I love Japanese hand saws. They're beautiful, and they're really functional. A good soldering iron, good utility knife, X-Acto knife. It kind of really depends on what area of interest you're going to pursue. But, you know, I definitely have my go-to wire cutters, my go-to scissors, all that kind of stuff.
Why Japanese hand saws? Are these the ones that cut on the upstroke? I remember reading about these years ago.
Yeah, some do, but they're this beautiful, really thin blade. So there's often it's bamboo handles. I mean, they're just gorgeous to look at. But you can slide them in into tight spaces. And, you know, the cut, kind of the way they feel in your hand is just fantastic.
The items that you list here, too, and the materials, in other words, are these things that today's kids are generally familiar with, or at least they're fairly easily obtained?
Some are, some aren't. You know, some are a little weirder. Like, for instance, you know, wire and alligator leads for working with circuits is kind of a known thing, and you can find those things easily. But we do sewing with circuits or painting with circuits, and those you have to seek out kind of specialty suppliers either online or in a store. But what a whimsical way to think about circuits.
It really is. Let me let our listeners back in on what we're doing here. We're talking about The Art of Tinkering, a book out of the Exploratorium in San Francisco, where Karen Wilkinson and Mike Petrich are the co-directors of the Tinkering Studio and the co-authors of the book, The Art of Tinkering. Maybe there's some tinkering in your background. Tell us about that, and we can continue this discussion with Karen at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area in the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. You were just talking about sewing with circuits, and what was the other thing?
Yeah, and paint, too. There's conductive paint now, kind of like the ink on the cover, but it comes in tubes and jars, so you can paint it with a brush.
This is the stuff that really got me going. It's like, so there's not only sewing and painting with circuits, but you also have, there's a recipe in here for making your own electrically conducting Play-Doh?
Yeah, the squishy circuits. That was created by a woman named Anne-Marie Thomas. She actually teaches kind of STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math at the collegiate level, but she has two young girls and was wanting to do some circuit work with them. And literally, this is going into your kitchen cabinet and making a dough, like a Play-Doh, that's squishy, and one being conductive and one that's not. So salt in one, sugar in the other, and you can stick leads to batteries, motors, LEDs. It's just, you know, you can't really talk about or do these things without smiling.
No kidding. It's only salt that makes it conductive?
Yes, yeah.
Wow.
Lots of it, but yeah.
Okay, well, yeah, I guess not the kind of dough you'd want to eat, that's for sure.
Right.
Yeah, but you're bringing back some memories now, because I remember an experiment when I was a kid, and just putting the wires in the water got nothing on the meter, but when you added salt and stirred, bing, up went the meter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really just playing with and experimenting with that same idea.
What are punnets, I notice, in the list of ingredients here, and what are those used for?
I think those are the strawberry baskets.
Right,
yeah.
Yeah.
Dirters and punnets, those were two new words for me. A dirter is the cardboard center of a paper towel tube or toilet roll.
Dirter, that's what it's called. Okay, not a dit-da-da.
And then, no. Oh, well, actually, I don't know. And then the punnet is the strawberry basket. We collect those ourselves, but we had to get a big load of them once, and we were trying to figure out where we could even buy them, and Googled it.
So tell us about the seven people who make up the Tinkering Studio team. This is a book that is just lavishly illustrated with photographs, and it's not just the stuff that people make, but the people who make them themselves.
Yeah, so there's a whole team of us, and we've grown over time and really represent, an eclectic mix and have all sorts of interests and hobbies that we bring to this. So some of us have arts background, some of us have neuroscience and geology as a background, English and literature. It's just, I think that's another thing that is so terrific about tinkering. It's not just for the people who have self-identified as science people. It's for everyone.
The the process that goes on there then, I mean, this is generally just about education and creating things and lighting up parts of your mind, but it sounds like this is sort of like it could be an entry level into some of the laboratories that that corporations and universities run as well, where you're just experimenting and discovering things, inventing
things.
Yeah,
I think so. And, you know, the Bay Area down here is kind of hot for that in terms of startups and university labs and things. But corporations are actually seeking us out, talking about setting up tinkering studios for employees. It's an interesting thing, getting people into a mindset of just kind of stepping back a little and from the problem or whatever it is that they're working on and kind of losing themselves in tinkering. It is helpful at all levels.
Is this something of a lost facet to corporate America? Because I remember reading in the days back when AT&T was the only phone company basically for the whole country, Bell Labs let their guys free to develop whatever they wanted, and it wasn't really specifically related to just the business of AT&T.
Yeah, there's definitely a tradition of this. You know, Bell Labs, Xerox PARC, there were some biggies, but I feel like now even smaller companies are really seeing the importance of offering spaces and time for this kind of thing for employees.
All right, let's talk about some of the tinkering results in the book. There's a Ken Murphy's History of the Sky. Tell us about that.
Oh, so beautiful. So Ken is a coder by day and developed an idea to track the San Francisco sky. So he calls us up and he says, hey, can I have access to the roof at the Exploratorium? And of course, you know, you always want to know why, but you always start with, why, yes. and then he comes up with this idea to mount this camera and record time-lapse video of the sky over the course of a year. And then he coded it to where the display kind of gives all of these squares. So you see this visual data display of the San Francisco skyline, or the San Francisco sky. So you see clouds and rain and just beautiful formations. I found it surprising, not being native to the Bay Area. You know, I always tell people, oh, it's really foggy in San Francisco all the time. And actually, there were a lot more sunny days than I really realized.
And so what did it take to pull this all together? What kinds of things did he have to do for this?
Well, it's all software. So he that's not true. He built the physical rig. And the funny part there was he had to go up and maintain this thing from time to time because he stopped getting pictures. And it wasn't a technological error. There were spiders that were building webs, really thick webs, inside of his little box that he made for the camera equipment.
I remember this from when TV stations began to put up their little weather cameras on roofs, and they'd have to go up there every so often because spiders would crawl across downtown Portland and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the book, I mean, that itself is a fascinating enough project, but from there you push ahead. I mean, there's a lot of work here with time-lapse photography. And so the people who are thinking about doing this sort of thing, what kinds of stuff are they going to need to make that happen?
Well, with the photography stuff, it literally is as simple as a camera. And there's time-lapse directions that you can go. But then we also have a collection of people that have really just reconsidered the camera itself. Chris Benton flies cameras from kites and takes aerial photos. David Lang stuck a camera on an underwater rover that takes pictures as it moves around underwater, a little robotic thing. A 9-year-old girl sent her Hello Kitty up into near space, so you see a picture of that. And one of my favorites, Justin Quinnell, he was experimenting with the idea of pinhole cameras. So not a camera, but the film. He stuck it inside of his mouth and takes a picture out through his teeth. And he's standing at the sink, and one, he's in the tub, and you see his feet and the faucet, and it's just, you know, hilarious.
When you talk about the Hello Kitty camera going to near space, how far up did Hello Kitty travel?
Yeah, I don't know exactly on Lawrence, but mm-hmm. A lot of folks are doing that, sending up weather balloons, and there really is a whole community online that you can connect with for people who are really into this stuff.
There's a great picture here of an aerial view of the San Francisco Bay salt marshes. It's the kind of picture that's so colorful, you turn the page and go, whoa. And you talk about the kites and the other things that people have used to fly the cameras up there. Have we gotten to a point in history, though, where the kinds of things that could be turned out by the tinkerers at the tinkering studio or the people using this book, industry ends up creating pretty quickly, too? I mean, because while we're talking about flying Hello Kitty into near space on a kite or a balloon or something, we also have drones coming online now.
Yeah, I think it really is the tinkerers. You know, being very candid about this, I think it's the tinkerers that drive the innovation. And yeah, it would be silly for industry not to pick up on this.
How do you strike a balance then, either in the lab or, I tell you what, I'll save this question for the other side of a break. I'm getting so fascinated, I'm losing track of time here. We'll take a short break and come back and talk with Karen Wilkinson, the co-author of The Art of Tinkering, when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange. Join us at 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782 or jx@jeffnet.org. Back to talk about tinkering with Karen and you in a minute 30. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Karen Wilkinson. She is the co-director with Mike Petrich of the Tinkering Studio at the Exploratorium in San Francisco. They have turned what they do in the studio into a book called The Art of Tinkering. Meet 150-plus makers working at the intersection of art, science, and technology. This goes way beyond the boys' book of electricity and maybe some of the things you saw growing up. Join us on the Exchange as we talk about tinkering and the sorts of results you can get from it. 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782, and our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. So how do you strike a balance both in the studio and in the book between providing instructions and just providing a push? You know, in other words, at some point, do you just sort of stop and say, okay, what'd you come up with? Or do you just get them all the way to the end of a particular idea or project?
Yeah, you've got your finger on the biggest issue for us. How do we share our enthusiasm for experimenting with this stuff without having people all come up with the same outcome? We really appreciate kind of the varied outcomes and the creativity. So we didn't want it to be a step by step, but we felt like we had to give people enough information so that they could at least get going.
All right, so you do provide some things from start to finish in the book, recipes in essence or project lists, but then there's also an urge to continue to examine things for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why we included such a strange kind of variety of all these different tangential things related to an idea like the cameras you mentioned.
Well, and then you also have something in there called photograms, which are really interesting. Tell us about those.
Oh, those are, you know, with each one of these artists, they all have an incredible story. Leanne Langwell is the woman who came up with this idea, and ironically, as a kid, she swallowed a ring, and having to be x-rayed to see this ring had a really profound impact on her whole life. She studied to be an x-ray technician and now does artwork based on this same idea. So she lays out on huge sheets of photo paper objects, really familiar objects, fishing tube and lace and kind of ornaments, all sorts of things that are either clear or opaque, and then exposes them to light. And you get what look like things taken under microscopes, images that look like, I don't know, to me they look like pollen or just beautifully biological things, and they're made by everyday objects.
Just laying them on photo paper and exposing them to light?
Yep.
Contact prints.
Yeah.
In today's digital world, how hard is it to find supplies to do stuff? I mean, can you find photo paper easily anymore?
Yeah, you can, actually. You know, that's the funny thing. All of this stuff, that's the great thing about the web. It gives us access to things from, you know, unusual enthusiasts from around the world. But even in your own local area, it's surprising what you find when you actually go looking for it.
I'm curious about the work process of the Tinkering Studio. I mean, how often do tinkerers work together? How often work alone in their own spaces? I mean, it seems like they do have their own spaces.
Well, yeah, we, you know, in the tinkering studio anyway, we want to provide opportunities for autonomy, but also ways to collaborate. It's fun to participate in something larger than yourself. And there is that image of the solo tinkerer, you know, usually a guy in his garage. And that's, you know, I'm not knocking that at all, but I feel like there's more opportunity to engage a wider community in your hobbies and interests, and just get more people into this way of working.
That's that could be a real recipe for partnerships. I mean, obviously, you and Mike have been doing this together for so long.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, we tinker with work and life continuously, but I do feel like whether it's, you know, a groundswell, we there's this program we participate in called Young Makers, where it's literally clubs, parents most often, that say, I've got some space in my garage and we're gonna make some things with kids in the neighborhood. And we see these springing up all over the country.
I asked tangentially before. I'm going to ask a little more directly about the Maker movement, because there are things like the Maker Fair now. How long has all this been going on?
Well, Maker Fair, I think we went to the first one 7 years ago now, and it continues to grow. They're happening worldwide. There's actually one in the Bay Area in May on the 17th and 18th that I would recommend if you haven't been down. It's worth the drive down. It's a weekend kind of blowout celebration of high and low tech things. To me, the tinkering studio, we really relate to things at Maker Fair in terms of wanting to keep that enthusiasm going year round. You know, Maker Fair is a weekend, and I want people to know about it, but I also want to have a celebration of those makers and tinkerers all the time.
The crossovers between science and art, and you talk about this, the intersection of art, science, and technology is the subtitle of part of the subtitle of The Art of Tinkering. But the crossovers, particularly between science and art, astound when you get into things like electronic poppables. What are those?
Yeah, so that is a graduate researcher out of the MIT Media Lab, Gi-Chi, and she, this is the amazing thing. She came and did a residency with us and talked about her entry into electronics. This is what she does now. But she talked about being introduced to electronics and breaking everything for a month. And she said she thinks that's really the way that everybody should learn electronics. But then, you know, over some time, she created this incredible book. Her assignment given to her from her professor was to experiment with switches. And she was asking herself, why do switches have to look like switches? And she comes up literally with a pop-up book. So you're pulling a lever and you're manipulating a flower that opens up. Or when you open up the pages, a planet pops up. And those things are then embedded with pressure sensors that she made, homemade pressure sensors. Kind of one is what are those things called? Those plants, I'm blanking on the name.
The Venus flytrap?
Yes, thank you. You stick your finger into one of those, and then all of the others that have popped up close. That's using something called muscle wire.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, this is a long way off from those ceramic-based light bulb things we used back in sixth grade.
Yeah, same concept, different materials.
Absolutely. So, I mean, when we talk about, like, we talked about the squishy circuits already and the circuits you can sew with, circuits you can paint with. Is there anything not wireable? I mean, it seems like there are more ways you can get circuits to go through things than ever before.
Yeah, there is an endless supply of things that people are trying to electrify. That is for sure.
Right. Well, there's obviously so many things you can learn individual skills in here. Like there's a whole section that shows what the basic embroidery stitches are, which brings me back to one of the exhortations at the beginning of The Art of Tinkering, which is go ahead, get stuck. So when you get there, what do you do? How do you restart when you are stuck?
Yeah, I think, you know, we interviewed a lot of the tinkerers in the book, and they all kind of give advice on this. And everybody has something that they've found kind of works for them. But I think really our message there is that don't internalize it and think, oh, I just can't get this. I'm stupid. That's not it. You know, science, this is figuring out, puzzling your way through something. Talk to someone, see if they can look at the problem. Half the time, when you're explaining what you're working on to someone else, you're going to come up with the idea for how to fix it. Maybe go for a walk or take a shower. You know, a lot of people talked about that, you know, when they step out of the studio or work, an idea comes just when they're thinking about something else. There are all sorts of techniques for that. But whatever you do, don't think, I can't figure this out, because you can.
You know, there's that famous picture of Thomas Edison with his head resting on his hand, where he looks like he's really tired. you know, maybe that was the way he got the reset. But I mean, the fact is, it does seem like a lot of creative people talk about what you're just talking about. Walk away from it for a few minutes.
Yeah.
Even longer than that, maybe, and come back.
Yeah, it's really taking a break, but also giving yourself that permission to, you know, you're not, those mistakes, they're natural. They really are.
Do you find some would-be tinkerers, Karen, get stuck in thinking sort of linearly or in silos, I guess is the current term in use, wait, I know I'm trying to make something useful, but this is art, you know, that it's not what I was trying to do. It's something else. It's pretty, but it's not useful, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, that can happen. I mean, there are definitely, you know, people who are wanting to make things that are useful, but I find that if we give ourselves permission to kind of mess around a little bit, useful things come out of it, but so do kind of just wonderful art pieces too.
And you mentioned the woman who broke just about everything in the electronics in her house. I mean, do you find that some of the better tinkers are the ones who would do things like take apart the broken CD player or a DVD player or any of that stuff?
Yeah, the curiosity to take it apart, mm-hmm. the gumption to sort of reassemble it into something else or put it back together. Putting back together isn't always easy. But I think, you know, the tinkerers throughout the book, the thing that I think they all have in common is this tinkerer's disposition. It's a practice. The more you do it, the better you get. It's like anything else. But I feel like it's a practice that'll serve you well, you know, throughout your life.
And what kind of time period do you recommend for the practice? Is this like, you know, do it for 20 minutes a day at least and you'll start getting really good at it?
Yeah, you know, I would try to, you know, you don't really have to say, okay, now I'm going to sit down and tinker, but bringing that attitude to whatever it is you're doing, you know, the way you drive to work, but also the physical stuff, just making time for you to kind of push your thoughts, especially with the physical phenomena. For us, if you drew a Venn diagram with art, science, and technology, where those things overlap, that's a particularly sweet spot for tinkering. And you can't really tell if it's art, if it's science, or technology.
Is it a very big sweet spot?
It can be, yeah.
Let's take a call. Here's Boyd in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Karen Wilkinson. She is the co-author with Mike Petrich of The Art of Tinkering.
Good morning.
Hi.
This tinkering stuff, I've been doing it for a few decades, and to me it's magnificent. And it has led me to this place, and I find this to be a real useful phrase, be your own expert. That all those other experts out there, that if you follow what they say, somebody paid for them to say that, and the accuracy of it is questionable most of the time.
Yeah, I think what Boyd is suggesting is something I really agree with. Through tinkering, you build an amazing amount of not only confidence but competence. It's this kind of knowledge about stuff that is so durable. And pretty profound.
And so, Boyd, are there any particular things you're proud of you'd like to tell us about?
Well, a great big thing in my life was diet. Actually, I worked in restaurants when I was young, and it all looked kind of strange, but I did what I was told and went on from there. And then I ran across some people and were into something called macrobiotics. And so I started experimenting with diet. And, well, I've grandly improved my health and way outlived one doctor's forecast and so on. That and plus, you know, I fixed my own car and things like that. And after a while, I, you know, got a sewing machine. It's not that hard to figure out.
Oh, okay, so just something new every time. All right, thanks for that, Boyd. Appreciate that. And that's the real spirit of a tinker, isn't it, Karen?
Yeah, absolutely. It's turning those things into your life in a way that you kind of, you examine them from different perspectives and just pursue it with a passion. He mentioned food. I mean, food alone is an area for tinkering that people are doing amazing things out there.
Like what?
Well, I mean, I love people who are sculpting with food. They're trying out different materials. There are, you know, people who are kind of experimenting with polymers and putting food that has unusual and surprising tastes, like you eat powder that tastes like garlic. You know, it's about people kind of just pushing ideas. There are people doing outrageous and incredible things, but they started somewhere. And it really is with individual curiosity where it all begins.
Here at the Exchange, we got a kick this week out of the news stories about the powdered alcohol.
Yeah. Speaking of things with food. Example.
And then I noticed this morning, too, it's things that, you would normally use for food getting used for other purposes. There was a piece in the paper this morning about people using kitchen blenders to make carbon composites that are very strong and yet extremely light at the same time.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. I also read something this morning, too, about a woman who had developed a technique for turning soda bottles into an extrusion that can be used in 3D printers. I mean, it's really, it's reimagining kind of the everyday. There's a woman, Kelly Dobson, too, who created this blender that I think it was part social experiment, part art piece. It's a blender that when you growl at it and raise your voice, it goes faster and faster and faster.
Really? So if you make that rrr sound,
yeah.
It's
yeah, a low rumble gets you, you know, a tiny puree. And
and so, yeah, you have to, like, really make a high-pitched sound for frappe or something.
Yeah, right.
That's amazing. This really gives, I think, a lot of people some hope that there is still room for the person who's willing to sit down and work with a pair of pliers or a Leatherman tool or a screwdriver at a time when so much is provided for us through software and through apps and phones and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I would encourage everyone you know to spend more time working with their hands. Yeah, Leatherman is a perfect tool. I forgot about that one.
I was going to ask if you carried one around.
Absolutely.
That was a regular thing for you. All right. Karen Wilkinson and Mike Petrich are the co-directors of the Tinkering Studio at the Exploratorium in San Francisco and therefore the co-authors as well of The Art of Tinkering. Meet 150-plus makers working at the intersection of art, science, and technology. A fun book. And Karen, fun to talk to you.
Thanks. It was a pleasure.
It's good to have you here today. Tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange at 8 o'clock, we'll talk about Inspire Academy at Southern Oregon University and talk about what that's all about. We will also talk about brewers and grain and potential federal regulations on brewers and what they do with the grain when they're done with it. Senator Ron Wyden is scheduled to join us. At 9 o'clock tomorrow, we plan to talk to Dr. Jay Baruch about healthcare people and how they should be creative writers or think like creative writers. That's all tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. If you're listening in the morning, the takeaway is coming up next. If you're listening to our evening rebroadcast, we'll be followed by news from the BBC. Our producer and also at the controls today, Charlotte Duran, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Please join us again tomorrow at 8 for another edition of the Jefferson Exchange here on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. And have a great day.